A few weeks ago, I talked about higher order questioning and how we can more naturally include it in our lesson plans for science. More specifically, how we could lean on those most traditional taxonomies to guide our planning to ensure that we're always achieving or striving for a comfortable struggle for our students, that they're always exploring and discovering to create their new knowledge because this is science. But that system, teaching that way, planning and teaching that way, that inherently requires you, the teacher, to deliver those experiences. It can never be achieved through lecture alone. In this episode, I am out to reveal to you the truth that you can demonstrate your expertise more through planning than pandering. At the time I'm recording this, it's 2024. And about a year ago, the entire world blew up over OpenAI and ChatGPT. Someone might have even suggested to you around that time that teaching will become obsolete as a profession, that teachers will become obsolete. If you ever come across videos or articles like that online, pay quick attention to the author, to the people that they interview, to the details of who's preparing that opinion piece. I can guarantee you that that person is not and has never been a K-12 teacher. Never responsible for a group of young children or adolescents or young adults, because they just know that that would not be possible. As practicing teachers, we know our job is a human job. It's never just about the content we teach. It's about the role we play in their lives and the commitment we make to fulfilling that role. We're out to make a difference. Consider these quotes by influential people. Every child deserves a champion. An adult who will never give up on them, who understands the power of connection, and insists that they become the best that they can possibly be. How about this one? Everyone who remembers his own education remembers teachers, not methods or techniques. The teacher is the heart of the educational system. And finally, maybe my favorite, your heart is slightly bigger than the average human heart, but that's because you're a teacher. You are a champion for the future, and your heart is the heart of the education system. Hit that like button if you agree. Just put a pin in that for a minute. We're gonna come back to our value as teachers, but I wanna shift a little bit into now our perspective on the effectiveness we have in teaching and learning in this modern age, as discussed, presented by a fifth grade teacher in Wisconsin named Sachin Pandya. If you're listening, I hope I didn't totally mutilate that name. It's a beautiful name. Sachin thoughtfully expressed this sentiment. He wrote, "Robot teachers are more likely to recycle and reinforce the status quo than change it." Now, for a little bit of context, I have totally pulled that quote from a blog post this person wrote in the context of, could we become obsolete? Will AI take over our jobs? But the rest of what he wrote really reinforced what I wanted you to see, which was exactly what you bring to your unique classroom and how you can stretch to be even better. He goes on to write that sitting on the sidelines and claiming that we only teach content isn't going to be enough in the future. If our only function is teaching academic skills, we should worry about becoming obsolete. We need to claim responsibility for developing young people, building community, and shaping the world our students live in. This teacher and I are twinning, at least in our ideas and our approach. In case you're new here, I've set up this new home on YouTube so that I could inspire secondary science teachers to let the practice of science guide their planning, so that they can always ensure their students are going through a process of exploration and discovery, because doing so is more than just mastering a set of academic skills. Mastering science as a practice is a life skill. Being able to take in the world around them, to assimilate it, to process all the things, to think about them critically and come out with an answer or a new conclusion, it's a process they'll repeat hundreds of times throughout their lives. As they learn to drive, to date, to make big expensive purchases, or maybe even to make decisions on behalf of their family members. And I believe it's our responsibility to guide our students through that problem-solving process in the safe space that our classrooms provide, with the support that we can offer them. But that kind of servant leadership isn't achieved through lecture. Let's revisit those taxonomies of higher order thinking that I recently discussed in another video. We're looking here at Bloom's taxonomy, something almost every teacher has been exposed to, this idea that students go from basic recall of knowledge to creating their own knowledge, and in the process going through this cascade of more complex thinking tasks. Since Bloom's is a little bit antiquated, and there have been multiple models proposed since then, I like to throw my own model in the ring, and I call this know, do, and think it through. When I'm planning for my students, those are the three things that I do want them to do in each of my lessons. This other model is Webb's depth of knowledge, which is very complementary to those original taxonomies like Bloom's taxonomy. It really focuses on when we are planning what kind of verbs and actions we can emphasize in the experiences we design or choose to deliver in our classroom to ensure students are thinking more critically. Because listing and labeling and matching isn't quite as high stakes as being able to analyze something or design something. Now, when we plan lessons with those taxonomies in mind and those tools maybe nearby, we're always thinking about what we want our students to do.
Yeah.
What's going to be the outcome of the lesson when they complete these tasks? And we understand or implicitly trust that as they complete tasks at the higher end of that continuum, they have a more thorough understanding of the content, a mastery of the content even. But have you ever thought about your own actions as a teacher in this context? Have you ever used them to think about how you could challenge yourself to go deeper and learn more or express more your mastery of the content you teach, or your mastery of your understanding of what it takes for students to learn it, or your mastery of the students in your classroom? I've considered what a taxonomy like this would look like, and I'm proposing it for you here today. I'm breaking it apart into three big levels, like I did before with know, do, think it through. Well, this one for us is going to sound, it's a little mnemonic. That one was a little rhymey. This one is a little alliterative. I really like alliterations. Serve it up, sort it out, or support to solve. I'm going to explain how I see and think of each of them. And as I do, I want you to think about how much it matches your daily classroom work, your daily classroom culture. If we were to put a little video camera in there and watch for a week or a month, where would we mostly land? And at the end of this video, I'm going to ask you to share that in the comments below. In classic teacher fashion, I'm going to break down those three areas into more specifics so we could digest a little better. So I'm thinking if you are usually serving it up to your students, the very lowest level teaching strategy you might use is dictation. Maybe you're dictating to your students. This is essentially letting your school curriculum, your textbook, or your standards lead the learning in your classroom. Relying primarily on direct instruction and similar techniques, this is our lecture level. This is where we tell students everything we think they need to know, and we require that they recall it back to us. In fact, there's nothing else students can do with the knowledge when they're just served it up on a silver platter. Another very common or popular thing we might do in this serve it up level is demonstrate. In science, I'd say this is particularly popular and misleading with regard to its impact. In fact, I think of demonstrating as being one of two possible types of modeling. We have the problem-solving modeling. This is like when I teach dimensional analysis as the mechanism for completing stoichiometry problems in my chemistry class. There is one way to do it. The students have to do it that way. And there's no room for choice. There's no room for creativity. It's a means of modeling. And to lecture alone wouldn't serve the purpose because the students need to see the sequence of steps. This is a demonstration. And this lives squarely in serving it up. It's just me lecturing with visual aids. But if we consider tangible demonstrations, now we're providing students an opportunity to observe something. We're actually asking them to think more deeply about what they're seeing on the surface level. And it's probably pretty inspiring. Some of the science demonstrations we can do are like, wow, that's amazing. Whoa, so cool. Now we're kind of encroaching on that sorted out stage because we've provided a muse. We've initiated the scientific process of observation, thinking about what we see. We've added some awe, which created some inspiration, and likely that moved the students more naturally toward motivation. They want to do something with what they see. So why in my taxonomy have I relegated this to sort of the middle? Mostly we would keep it in the sorted out level because the teacher is still having to explain why the student is seeing this fantastic phenomenon. Students really aren't able to dig in and find out why. But we're moving up our ladder here. The other thing we might do in the sorted out stage is search for existing solutions that would allow us to provide experiences to students so they can practice the whole series of science actions from observation straight through to conclusion. We might be delegating when we're searching the internet, we have the best intentions and we're using our content knowledge to sift through, you know, the wheat from the chaff. What would be a great activity for our students to do? Maybe we end up on a teacher blog where they're explaining something really cool and also very detailed and data dependent. Or maybe we've specifically gone to a popular teacher resource marketplace where we can buy resources that teachers have taken a great deal of time and effort to align to standards and present in a very specific way. Maybe we're even searching for student-controlled simulations because we are tech people and we believe tech is so much better than talk. And when we find these simulations, we realize, hey, there's a lesson plan to go with it.
Nice.
Here, in delegation, in sorting it out for ourselves, we're relying on someone else's content knowledge to create the curriculum piece. And then we're focusing all of our efforts on how we might deliver it. So we were really instrumental in sourcing it because we know exactly what we need in terms of content and standards. And we know our students really well. We know how they are going to maybe assimilate something, but we're going to skip that middle step. We're going to let somebody else handle the complexities of the content. Sasheen, our favorite fifth grade teacher that I was telling you about earlier in Wisconsin, he notes this about his teaching practice and his classroom. Quote, "It's centered on rich content and integrated projects that allow students to collaborate, be creative, and experience growth." Now, I did a little digging for an inspirational quote that will tie together what I was talking about in the very beginning of this video. Our value as human being teachers, working with human being students, and our teaching strategy, all this really professional expertise we've gained, whether it's from our time in the classroom or our time in an academic program, and how those two can collide and do exactly what Sasheen is referring to. Here it goes. "The art of teaching is the art of assisting Discovery. Nailed it. As science teachers, we lead content that is only even known. Human beings are only aware of it because of discovery. So when we're planning lessons at this higher end of this taxonomy, the higher end of sorted out and supporting the solve, we really are modeling for our students science as a discipline. Now you're probably wondering, how can we go any higher than sourcing these amazing activities and projects? Like Shasheen said, rich content and integrated projects. What's wrong with just using somebody else's? Absolutely nothing. The only thing missing would be your firsthand knowledge and intimate understanding of your students in your community and in your classroom. This video ends up to be all about Sashin, because I'm going to share you more about what he says. And I think it's just fantastic because he is backing me up, and he is a middle school-ish, elementary school-ish teacher teaching social studies. Sashin's going to enlighten us some more. And I love sharing what his ideas are because I share the same sentiment. He says, I have a scope and sequence to follow, but I adapt my teaching to the students in front of me each year and what they need. As exhausting as it is, I rarely teach the same unit in the same way. I'm constantly re-examining it through my students' eyes and what they need. This requires an understanding of the students in the class, something we can't ask AI for. Sashin leads his classroom by supporting his students to solve problems. Problems he creates based on his knowledge of those students and their relationship to the content he's teaching. To consider multiple perspectives, to draft ideas, and to iterate on them. In this article, which I'm going to share in the link below in the description, he's talking about mapping projects, like a geography assignment in a social studies class. If he's able to imagine such cool possibilities for content that's kind of static, how much more are we able to imagine what we could provide by way of experience to our students with content that is naturally investigative and naturally discovery-driven? The practice of science demands that our students recognize cross-cutting concepts, all seven of them, and I've got a video on that too, so if you're still with me, check it out. It's in the links below. Cross-cutting concepts only come alive through experience. But you will always be the authority on your student. As young people, as young adults, as they are growing and enduring their own unique life challenges, you will always know best who they are, what they can do when they begin, and how to shepherd them through to their own unique success stories. This is supporting through to a solution. And it does truly require us to create ourselves the curriculum piece that will lead learning. It also pushes us to know more about our content, or at least strut our stuff and demonstrate how much we know about our content without preaching it from a podium. As I see it, this is our mountaintop, the peak of what should be a teaching taxonomy. When we flex our teaching skills in this way, through transformation from boring and basic to insightful and individualized, we're offering students the ultimate opportunity to express what they understand in that higher order, rigorous way, to show off their own logic, reasoning, and problem-solving skills and grow them beyond what they thought was possible. Now, I absolutely would recommend to you that you strive for this level, supporting to solve each and every day in your classroom. My channel is, after all, called Lab in Every Lesson, but I definitely don't want you to misunderstand today's message. It is not that you have to do this and only this to be ultimately successful or ultimately impactful. In any given lesson, we might demonstrate a little bit of each of these tiers, just like we expect our students to pass through this continuum from basic recall to thorough analysis, evaluation, and understanding. Where do you pretty much live on this continuum when it comes to planning and instructional time in your classroom? You would flatter me so much to share that in the comments below. Are you at serve it up, sort it out, or support to solve? If you're like me and you want to be as reflective as possible, go ahead and share in those comments the amount of time you think you do all of them, because we probably are doing all of them. And once you've identified where you live on this landscape that I've laid out for you, you've also simultaneously set a new goal for yourself. So aim higher, push yourself to give more of yourself in a way that makes you feel good about all that you know and all that you can do. Whether your next stop is sorting it out or supporting to solve, I encourage you to watch this video next. It'll teach you all about how tech could get you there faster and easier. In this video, I'll guide you through and to that process of delegation as you seek to serve every student in a superior way.